Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon.
Wow. We had a big week last week, huh?
We did.
Yeah.
It was very, very fun.
Yeah, it was exciting.
Uh-huh. Great people and great subjects to talk about and, yeah, it was very nice.
Yeah.
We could do that more often.
Absolutely. I love being there in person with people.
Mm-hmm.
See them talking, see their face.
Mm-hmm.
So excited.
And as we noticed, people seem to hop up to that microphone with more alacrity than they hop over to that telephone.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting. It's a great projection exercise for me because I would be just the opposite.
Huh.
You know, I'd be really good over the telephone, you know, calling from especially if nobody knew who I was, you know, that wouldn't be intimidating to me, but hopping up in front of that microphone would be. And so it's just a good kind of a little check-in periodically to see that my projections are just my projections. They have nothing to do with anything we might call reality.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I sense that people there in the audience could see other people standing up and sharing what was going on with them. And I guess got a sense of possibility in that.
Yes.
And freedom and seeing through whatever they're looking at.
Yeah. It's kind of a, maybe that's a piece of it. There's a sort of a, we're all in this together.
Yes.
You know, if you're going to be straightforward about what's going on with you, well, you give me the courage to be straightforward about what's going on with me.
Yes.
And if I can find compassion for you, then I'm going to project that you're finding compassion for me, and let's hold hands and get through this.
Yes. And I get that same sense when people call into the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
They hear other people calling in, hear what they're going through, how they're looking at it,
mm-hmm.
in a sense that, you know, I have the willingness too. I'm willing to look at this, see what's going on with me,
mm-hmm.
share my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what happens to us in doing that, the power to me of group, whatever group that is that what goes on inside, when it's just inside of us, it can torture us. But as soon as we find the courage or the willingness or whatever it takes for us to put it outside, we get that distance on it.
Yes.
And it loses power over us. And then we hear other people, and they're doing the same process, and we think, oh my gosh, that's so sad that person is being tortured over that, or that's so unfair, or that person doesn't deserve that. And then slowly it begins to dawn on us, well, gosh, maybe I don't deserve all this suffering either.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And when I share my stuff, you know, and say it out loud and get it outside of my head, such freedom in that.
Yes.
And you can hear how ridiculous it is.
Yes.
And you see other people's responses and you realize, yes, it is ridiculous.
Yes, it really is. I can hear as I'm saying it, that it's ridiculous.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But when it's inside my head, it's not ridiculous. It is true and real and right, and it's embarrassing and humiliating, and the only thing that I can do is hide away and hide it from others and pretend it's not going on and hope a miracle happens and it goes away someday.
Yes.
It's very sad to live within that. It's sad because it's so unnecessary.
Yes. Yes, and that's the whole process of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. It's
getting that outside, seeing what actually is going on there.
Yes, and realizing, you know, the whole point of awareness practice, the whole point of a process of ending suffering is seeing who we really are. And the more we get this stuff out and have that distance and hear other people doing the same and get a distance from what they're putting out, we're closing in on, I am not that. What I think of as me, what I experience as I, the deepest part of myself, is the awareness that can be aware of that. So it doesn't matter what kind of self-hating conditioning I have. It's not me. So I don't want to protect it. I don't want to keep it in a safe place and hide it away so that nobody else can see it and I can't see it. I don't want to do that. I don't want to have that kind of relation. Why?
Yes.
Why? When that, it doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yes. Yes, that group experience is really Amazing.
Powerful. Yeah.
And in that, I see, you know, I thought I was special, but
yep.
actually, I'm quite, well, I am special.
I am special.
And I'm just like everyone else.
Just like everybody else. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm special, and I'm just like everybody else. I was just writing something for the Assisi Peace Project, which, as you know, I'm somewhat passionate about at this
yes.
point. And what I was trying to describe to people is a place where we can all be together, and nothing and no one is excluded from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what conscious, compassionate awareness is. That's what's there when we stop giving all of our time and attention to this, what we talk about as egocentric karmic conditioning. We get that outside. We see that for what it is. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
false. That's illusion. That's not me. That's not us.
Mm-hmm.
So then what is it? What is there? What is the authentic nature? And we realize that it's that conscious, compassionate awareness. And that includes all of us. In that, we are one.
We are one.
Yeah.
And there's no separation.
There's no separation. And all of this trying to hide out and pretend that I'm not selfish and that I don't have mean and ugly, petty little thoughts and that I don't get angry and, you know, keeping this, what around the monastery we call a cardboard Henry.
Cardboard
you know,
Henry.
This fake identity that I hold up in front of me and, you know, fine, I'm fine. And
just fine.
This fake little smile and behind it I'm hiding all these awful secrets about myself.
Yes.
And eventually we say, oh, this is, you know, that cardboard Henry is too heavy. I can't carry that around anymore. I don't want to. We put it down.
Yes.
We see other people are putting theirs down, and we realize, wow, we are all just exactly alike, aren't we?
Yes.
In the sense that, you know, when we walk out into nature, nature is exactly alike. Now, there's a pine tree, and there's a daffodil, and there's a bird, and there's a... And the appearance, the look, is very different. But it's not very different. It's all life. And the thing that most of us, those of us who love nature, love most about being in nature is that everything except human beings can be authentically, unselfconsciously, exactly what it is. And we just love it for that. And
yes.
the thought of being that way ourselves completely terrifies us.
Yes, just being ourselves.
Just being ourselves, authentically ourselves.
Yes.
You know, sometimes we say stupid stuff. Sometimes, you know, sometimes we're not nice. Sometimes we're generous and kind and beautiful beyond our ability to even allow ourselves to take in.
Yes.
It's all there. You know, I was with this cat today, and it was trying to do something, and it fell off of what it was trying to do, you know. And it was just so endearing. It was so adorable. But if a human being had done that, you know, that person would have been so miserable in their humiliation that it would be hard to, you know, it would be unlikely that they could receive that, all of that love, all of that, you are just the cutest thing that I've ever seen,
yes.
kind of approach that I had for this cat. You know, the human is, I know you hate me because how could you not? You know, I'm such a klutz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. These ideas we hold.
These very unhappy ideas we hold for no reason.
Yes.
Just no reason.
And cling to them very tenaciously.
Oh, as if they were who we are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And if you'd like to join our conversation today with Sherry Huber, you can give us a call at 650-723-9010. And if you want to email us, you can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. Archives of today's show and all previous shows are on Sherry's website, which is sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And that phone number again is 650-723-9010. So give us a call and tell us all about your cardboard Henry or your freedom or whatever else is going on.
Whatever else you're up to.
Yes.
You know, just listening to you go through that, I hear myself say periodically, it is a great time to be alive. And listening to you go through that, you know, the website and the archives of the show and the telephones and the radio show and the
yes.
emails and, you know, it is a great time to be alive.
Yes.
The connection that is available for us is just truly extraordinary.
Yes. You can almost contact anybody at any time in any way.
Exactly.
You're limited by your imagination.
Really? Yeah, and if you want, you can, you know, if there's no big pond in between, you can get in your car and drive there, or you can get
yes.
on an airplane and fly there, or you can, yeah, it's just, it's a wonderful thing. You know, think about, not that long ago in the scheme of things, where if somebody set off from the east coast of this continent to go west, they said goodbye to everyone and everything because they were never coming back.
Yes.
They were never going to see him again.
Yes.
And now, whew. I mean, just such a few years ago, you know, if you're going along, if there was an emergency and somebody was on the road, well, it's just whenever it occurred to them to stop at a payphone and give a call.
Yes.
And now, you know, we're just instantly available to everybody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For better or worse.
For better or worse. Love it or not.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it does, those phones do have those off buttons.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes I think some of them must be being sold without off buttons. But I think that's not the case.
Just on.
Just on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sherry, I came across an interesting story in a magazine I was flipping through. There's a guy named Kevin Carlberg who was living out his rock and roll fantasies. He was in a college band doing really well, and they landed this big, almost million-dollar record deal. And they started touring cross-country to promote themselves, and this guy developed a sort of crushing headache that wouldn't go away, and it turned out he had brain cancer. So everything came to sort of a quick halt with respect to that.
How old was he? Do you
25. Yeah, and the band was called Pseudopod.
Mm. And now, this is not the way we expect it to go.
No, that wasn't his plan. He was sort of going straight for the stars.
Yeah.
So he got this brain cancer, went into chemotherapy. That went into remission. He seems to be healing quite a bit now. And they're back on the road again with this band, with a lot of evening concerts. And during the day, they often visit local hospitals and play a concert for sick kids there. So it's really great. He's got a charity called Rockin' for Kids.
Wow. Boy, there it is. You know, when we're in the middle of something like that, the last thing we want to hear from somebody is, you know, this could be the best thing that ever happened to you. Because you're 25 years old and all your dreams are coming through and you get cancer in the brain.
Yes.
You know, this is not the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
Yes.
And then the person gets to the other side and, you know, I personally have never met anyone who does not say, that's probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Uh-huh.
It just opened my mind. It's opened my heart. I'm here in a way I wasn't before.
Yes.
That is powerful, isn't it?
Yes. And he plays for the kids in these hospitals, and they know he's been through it.
Yeah.
He's walked in their shoes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what an important piece of it, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, this is not just somebody who thought it would be nice. I mean, it's wonderful if it were just somebody who thought it would be nice to go play music at a hospital. But this is one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, this is, okay, you were where I am, and that's what you're doing now. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see light for myself.
Yes.
And however it goes, in this moment, I can see light for myself.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and he's got the big scar to show the kids as well.
Well, and, you know, kids love that kind of thing.
Yes.
So you know he's a hero there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sounds like he's a big
hero
all around.
Well, that's a good story.
That's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, the phones are ringing here.
Good. Let's see who it is.
I'd like to welcome Sue from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
We're great.
Doing well, thank you.
Are you ready for my question?
Yes,
ready.
We are.
I attended Sherry's workshop this past weekend in San Jose, at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment.
Yes.
And I had a question towards the end, but just ran out of time to ask it, and it's more of a clarification.
Sure.
We kind of did a role play during the workshop, and it kind of brought up the issue of doing good things, being a good person. And my question about it is the whole kind of clarifying how when you're a good person, how can that itself be create suffering? You think you're doing the positive thing, and I'm doing it because it's a good thing, but to clarify how even those sorts of things can create suffering versus just saying I'm doing a bad thing.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're pretty much onto it, right? that self-consciousness about the good thing. Is that what you're pointing at?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that there is just...
So consciously, I think I'm doing a really positive thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I'm doing anything negative or self-hating, but then how can that create struggle?
Uh-huh. Well, now, of course, there's the struggle that is, and this is subtle, but that's
all right. I think it's powerful when it's subtle.
Yeah. So there's the struggle that is simply inherent in identifying that this is a good thing and that I'm not doing a bad thing.
Uh-huh.
So there's that. That's a whole reality and identity that I have to keep in place. And then the struggle becomes, okay, so say I've flipped over to that end of the continuum. And
so I'm doing something very positive.
Yeah. But that's on one end of the continuum, right?
Okay, uh-huh.
Because the other end of the continuum is very negative.
Right.
So now it's kind of an interesting one, because here I am over on the end of very good thing. But really, all that's happened is that the continuum has shortened. In other words, still, not way down at the other end of the continuum, but right here next to good is bad.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to be watching. Is this good? Is this still good? Is this part of the good down? This isn't the bad. This isn't negative, is it? So I've really just made the whole thing smaller. Does that make sense?
When you say smaller,
in other words, I don't take this big, giant, boom from good to bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's really close. So if we were to talk about somebody who is devoted to okay, well, I'll give you my favorite example in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about these folks all the time, the monks at the monastery. Okay, so now these are good people. They are. Just beyond a doubt, these are good people. They never have a chance to be anything else. Right? I mean, they don't ever get out.
Right.
They're never able to make a choice for anything other than, you know, they go to meditation. They eat healthy food. They don't have access to anything that isn't good and good for them. Okay, and so everything then gets really small. So bad is defined as I felt really cranky inside when I was doing the dishes. Are you with me?
Yep.
Yeah. So for the rest of the world, that's laughable. All right, but in their world, when you're just over here on one end of the continuum, then everything is still the same. It's just that kind of...
So in your mind, it can grow to the exact same extent.
Exactly. So it's just as evil to not make yourself available to take the compost out as it is to embezzle from the company.
Right.
Is this at all speaking to what you're looking at?
Yeah, it's just the whole, like, trying to understand how even the positive things that we say that we're doing can actually be negative in our own mind. Just trying to clarify that, because I think there's that whole concept of, but I'm doing a good thing.
Yeah, but I'm doing a good thing, and boy, am I suffering over it.
Right.
Yeah, because the point of that is, I am a me doing something.
Right.
And that is suffering. When there's simply presence in the moment, when we've lost sight of good and bad, when we are just here and doing what our heart calls us to do, then somebody else will have to decide, is this a good thing, is this a bad thing?
Uh-huh.
But as long as we are self-consciously doing that, we're maintaining a separate identity, and that in itself is suffering.
Okay. So keeping the identity alone is where a lot of it starts from, no matter what the identity is.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good one. Thank you.
It's very helpful to understand that, because I think it's very easy to think, well, of course that's bad. Of course that's good. That
yes.
sort of,
yes.
so to take
and,
it a step
and,
further.
You know, the way you say that, the trap that we can fall into is, of course that's good, I don't need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really need to be present for it because it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah. And, of course, those of us who have fallen into that little trap know that we wake up being identified as the bad thing.
So at some point it will happen.
Yes.
So it's an inevitable, even though it remains all positive, it will become a negative.
It will become that.
It's almost inherent that it will.
It is inherent.
Okay.
Yeah, because we are on that good, bad, positive, negative continuum.
Right.
That duality is what I am a separate self, and I am relating to the good-bad continuum. That is suffering right there.
All right. And so
good.
That's a really hard thing to do in our society because we identify most things as one or the other.
Oh, the world of duality, the world of suffering. Yes, society is devoted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is wrong? That's where it usually gets played out. That's what's so interesting about Michael telling that little story about the rock star.
Uh-huh.
That's not really of that much interest in our society. Okay, we need very little good. If this were a beverage, it's many, many, many ounces of bad with just a tiny, tiny dollop of good. That's what is to taste for us as a society.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sue. Sure, it occurred to me at the end there, as you were talking, feels like I've gotten that sense recently when I look at the media and the newspapers and the TV, just a sense of that's all it is problems and something wrong and bad news and fear, and let's spend the last minute and throw in a good news story.
Uh-huh.
Last minute out of an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's good, right?
That's good.
I sometimes, you know, in my cynical, jaded mode, I think, now is that just so that I'll tune it in again tomorrow? It's kind of like I kid about something like golf. You know, if I can go out and I can just be so bad, but there was one shot that was sort of good.
Yes.
And that'll bring me back.
Yes.
You know? Maybe that's the little tiny dollop of good news at the end. You know, it'll keep the watchers from drowning themselves, and then they'll be back to watch tomorrow night.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that is cynical, isn't it, to have that have that attitude?
Yes. And I was thinking, as you were talking to Sue, that sense of stepping on, the way I think about it, stepping on one side of the duality is really stepping on both sides.
Yes.
Or a seesaw, for example. You know, I push this side down.
Yes,
and
exactly.
The other side is bound to react.
That's a really good image. If it's a seesaw, a teeter-totter,
yes.
I can stand right in the middle, and if I put both of my feet in equal distance apart,
mm-hmm.
I can balance that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But any time I lean to one side or the other, boom.
Yes.
Yeah. And the one side is down, and the other side is up, and that's all that's happened. They are linked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, if we carry that little image forward, to me, what we're doing in awareness practice in ending suffering is realizing that this is the case, seeing all of that, and knowing how all of that works, I can stand there in the middle. I can go to one end of it. I can go to the other end of it. I can step off it and walk away completely.
Wow.
But I don't have to figure out which is the right way, which is the wrong way, which is the good, which is the bad, and who am I, how am I for being where I am. It's that self-conscious, focused on me as the center of the universe that's the cause of suffering. Not, it's not even which side of the duality I'm on. That's not the cause of suffering. There's no suffering in the duality. The suffering is what I bring to it. The suffering is that my identity is created through the duality. That's where the suffering is.
So I've identified myself, for example, as a good person, as when Sue called in. And in maintaining that identity, I need to hold away everything, all evidence I have that I'm a bad person.
Yes. Yeah, and of course I have to kind of be keeping track of other people, because
yes.
And what am I a good person in relation to, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm a good person in relation to all of the ways I'm not a bad person, if that makes
yes.
any sense. And then I have to keep an eye on all of you, because what if you're all better than I am? Well, am I really a good person if everybody else is gooder? So I've got to make sure that at least some of you are not as good as I am.
Yes.
And how can that not be suffering?
Yeah. As you're describing that, I'm imagining all of this energy that's involved in that evaluation, monitoring, just exhausting.
Yes, it is. And that's where the life force goes. So we don't have it. We don't have it to live our lives, because it's all going in service to this, am I a good person, am I a bad person? What does this say about me? What is this? What me? I. You know, if you can imagine that, you know, the center of the universe is up in the air somewhere.
Yes.
You know, and I'm trying to hold me up there in that position.
Yes.
We get a sense of how much energy, how much life force is involved in that. It's not like I can simultaneously go out to dinner or play baseball or. Can't.
Or not very well.
I can't.
Yes.
If I did, I would drop me out of my place at the center of the universe.
Yes.
So it's all got to be focused on that all the time.
Yes. Yes. And there are so many of us.
Whew. Now, the good news is we are all the center of the universe. We are. That's just how it is. It's the trying to make ourselves be. So in Zen, it would be... you know, trying to add legs to a painted snake. You know, trying to add another head on top of the one you already have.
Yes.
So it's this trying to make something happen that's already there.
It's
We're already the center of the universe.
Yes.
Just let it go, relax, and enjoy it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then you have all that energy loosened up to do whatever it is that you would enjoy doing
yes.
there at the center of the universe.
Like live your life.
Like live your life, yeah. Like do all the fun things that there are to do.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber here on KZSU Stanford. We're going to take a quick break here. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca and DJ Foe with At the Cafe Bohemian. And then at 8 p.m., we have CW. If you'd like to join our conversation when we get back, give us a call at 650-723-9010. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, you mentioned that phone number, and phones just start ringing off the hook here.
Isn't that a good thing?
Yes.
For a call-in radio show?
It's a good thing for a call-in radio show.
If it weren't a call-in radio show,
then it would be okay.
It'd be interesting to see what in the world those people are doing. But for a call-in radio show, this is a very excellent thing.
Yes. I'd like to welcome Sarah from Palo Alto. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael and Sherry.
Hi.
Good evening.
Hi. Good evening. I've actually listened to your show a couple times before and thought it was really good and very deep and a really good program for this afternoon. I was actually not in the best state when I was turned on the radio, and just it's so nice to hear this stuff. This is just really a compliment question. It's not really a question. And
we don't mind.
Yeah.
We're all right with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, just, I mean, I really like the idea of, you know, letting go sometimes and not trying to build yourself up to the center of the universe and just being your, you know, being
your grand self. You know, the thing about it is, until we stop all of this trying to make myself be the center of the universe, all that, again, self-conscious, second-guessing, watching, comparing, judging, criticizing, fixing, improving, we don't know, until we stop that, who we actually are.
Yeah.
And who we are is truly magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just wanted to thank you for that. That was nice.
Good.
Okay. Well, thank
you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Thanks, Sarah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Phones are still ringing here, Sherry.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Elizabeth from Berkeley. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Hi.
Good evening.
I'm calling for one thing to thank you for your response a few weeks ago. Talked about some thoughts. It's not a good idea to indulge them and come back to the breath. And what you said about just look down and see where your feet are and then throw yourself wholeheartedly into the present moment. It's really been remarkable to have the simplicity of that intervene on my mind when it's spinning.
Yeah. It is so simple, isn't it? In fact, of course, people say to me regularly, that's too simple. You know, that can't be the answer. And then that is followed up by, well, what's going to happen to everything if I'm just standing around being where my feet are? I mean, how do I get anything done? How do we change anything? How do we fix anything? Yeah, and of course, that takes us right back into that world of misery and suffering.
Right.
Yeah, it takes us out of realizing that there isn't anything wrong, and if there's nothing wrong, there doesn't need to be anything fixed, which doesn't mean that we're not free to do whatever it is that we want to do.
Yeah, because somehow the throw myself wholeheartedly into the present moment gave me permission.
Yeah, and now here you are in the present moment, and what is here in the present moment, and how might you participate in that?
Yeah, so, but I have a question about projection from something that came up around a Thanksgiving trip to Southern California. You probably covered this in the email class, which I wasn't able to. I did some of the initial homework, and then I was so involved in dealing with projections in my life, I went and did the homework in life instead of, you know, being able to be here by the computer. But I guess my question has to do with, I mean, obviously, well, maybe not everyone does, but it seems like sister relationships can be an opportunity for projection.
Sister?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And
not to mention parents and children.
Yeah. So, I met with my sister, and she had a lot of anger, partly triggered by a situation, but then it seemed like a backlog of residual anger got put out at the same time.
Mm-hmm. What we tend to do, isn't it? We build up reserves, and then, up here in the country, we don't have trash pickup. We have to go to the dump.
Ah.
And so what people do is that they save up their stuff for a really long time, and then they dump it all in one trip. And that's not unusual in interpersonal relationships either.
Right. So, I think somehow I was able to, like, name some of what was going on with me anyway, so I didn't retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was able to say, well, I can see that I'm getting defensive here, and you know, things like that. So it kind of brought me back to the present of what was going on with me. But since then, it seems like now, I don't know if there's, I think you had mentioned in the class something about reverse projection,
mm-hmm.
where now I'm kind of dwelling on it and having these conversations in my head
mm-hmm.
of things I'd like to say to her, but I'm restraining myself. But I think now I've triggered up my own projections onto her.
Yes, so it gets very active. So she says whatever she says to you, and you project what that means.
Right.
And from that, you deduce / project what she thinks of you.
Right.
And coincidentally, when we pay attention, what we conclude other people think of us is what we actually think of ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So then we get to that advanced stage where we don't even need another person. We can just carry on the whole thing by ourselves.
Right. I was actually relieved it was out of my head happening, where it wasn't all in my own head, you know?
Right, that she got involved somewhat.
Those voices were coming from the outside for a change.
Yeah, yeah. So, but they're not, actually, coming from the outside,
exactly.
Right? Because you're the one who's taking them in, receiving them, giving them the meaning, believing what you believe about them, then sending other messages back out that mean probably something to the receiver that's far different from what you as the sender intended.
And I haven't actually gone there, because I'm not sure what I would even say. What I would say if I actually spoke to her.
Well,
I haven't actually done that.
Well, but we do it inside our own
head. Yes, it's all been inside my head, but then what I'm wondering is, at what point can I be clear enough to communicate with her again?
Yeah, well, of course, so from my perspective, the answer to that would be never.
Really?
If it is with the intention of bringing something to her attention.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, making it clear to her what your perspective is, having her understand how you... I think never is a good time framework for that.
But then would I just act like it never happened? I mean, that's what we did in our family.
Well, in the world of ending suffering that I live in, what we do is work the whole thing out within ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Because we really get it, that there isn't anybody else involved.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes we see people act these kinds of things out where two people are having a conversation or they're having an argument or whatever, and it's clear to us as the observer that they're living in two completely different worlds. They're actually not interacting at all.
Uh-huh.
But most of the time, we believe that we are interacting, that we're talking about the same thing, that we're understanding one another, that we are communicating.
Uh-huh.
And we're not. We're just projecting and then receiving through our projections and then projecting and receiving through our projections. So if we bring it all back inside, you know, if you bring these two parts of yourself inside, the you part and the your sister part, and the way those two parts of you relate and what they project onto one another and what they believe about one another and all, and you resolve that relationship inside yourself, it'll be fascinating to see what relationship you have with your sister. Can you picture it?
Yeah, I know that's true.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I just don't know how I would initiate a conversation with her.
Well, in my world, you won't.
So I would never speak to her again?
No, you would just talk to her as you would talk to anybody else. And my encouragement always with people in these kinds of situations is think of it as a workshop. So don't go into it thinking, oh, thinking, oh, this is my sister, or thinking, oh, I'm just going to call my sister and we'll have a talk. You know, this is a workshop. And you interact with her in whatever way you want to interact with her. Now, in my world, it's an interaction that is designed to end suffering and not perpetuate karma.
Right.
And
that will work.
And then the work that I'm doing on the relationship, I'm doing inside myself with the me who is me and the me who is my sister.
Mm.
And as that relationship is resolved, magically, the relationship that I have with my actual external sister is transforming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Try and let me know, okay?
Yeah, and I guess that's fertile ground. And
yes.
I realize I have this compulsion that she understand me and clearly doesn't.
Well, here's the deal. You need to understand you.
Yeah.
You know, I want my sister to listen to me because I don't want to listen to me. I want my sister to understand me because I don't understand me.
Right.
And that's really an unfair burden to put on people.
Right.
It's my job to listen to me. It's my job to understand me. It's my job to be clear with me. It's my job to make peace with me.
Right.
Yeah. And then I can bring anybody else that I want to into that relationship.
Huh. And so those are just aspects of my personality that have printed out, looking like it's between me and her.
That's right. Yeah. She is of your creation.
And I'm of her creation?
Yes. Which, don't you suspect sometimes?
Yeah.
Like the sister she relates to doesn't have very much to do with who you are?
Exactly. That's
well,
the frustration.
The thing that we think is that other people are doing it, but we're not.
Uh-huh.
And the fact is, yes, we are. Okay. So keep us posted.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 650-723-9010, or you can email us at openair@kzsu.org. Sherry, it occurred to me as you were talking to Elizabeth, what a huge relief when I take care of myself.
Yes.
A relief for me and a relief for everyone else.
Yes. When I take responsibility for everything in my world, yeah, it's a huge relief. For
yes.
everyone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through something, I have a lot going on, and when I have the willingness to just stay there and see, okay, Michael, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Seems really helpful, seems really kind, compassionate.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you have to go lock yourself in your closet until you figure it out.
Yes.
Because you have people that you can talk about it with, who can... do reflective listening with you. You go to workshops and you bring it up as the thing that you're focused on. You know, there's all kinds of processes that we can do to help ourselves work through this. We just don't take it to the person with whom we have this huge karmic rant.
Yes.
Because it's
especially
not
that person.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
If we want to end suffering, you know, people will hear that kind of thing and. Well, so you're saying that I should never... No, I'm not saying that at all. In fact, of course, I think that people should do whatever they're doing until they've seen it clearly enough that they're ready to let that go and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if calling my mother up and interacting with her in the same way that I've been doing, you know, since I was 10 years old and that makes us both really unhappy is something I still want to do, then I should do it until I don't want to do it any longer. And when I don't want to do it any longer, now I'm open to other possibilities. And there are lots of other possibilities.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's exciting to me, that idea that I don't go looking to change anything in how I am. It's just that I'm a scientist now, and I'm going to pay attention
yes.
and see every aspect of what it is that I do.
Yes. Yeah. A scientist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I've got my little experiment here right in front of me.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm working on the life of.
Yes.
Yeah, then I fill in my name and go to work.
Yes.
And if I'm a good scientist, I'm going to let go of everything that I thought I knew.
Yes.
So that I can really be open to, well, what is here? So if I know nothing about this person, not, well, you know, I've always been a little on the lazy side. No, that's not good science.
Yes.
We have to find out.
Yes.
Is that true? Is that not true?
Yes.
So we have to watch very closely and carefully in an unbiased way.
Yes.
So all those beliefs and assumptions that I hold about myself, how I am in the world, how I am with other people, what other people are doing, what it all means, you know, I have to approach all of that with an open mind and a willingness to see what is so beyond my beliefs and assumptions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And projection, of course, is just the best way in the world to find out what our beliefs and assumptions are.
Right.
Because I project something onto you, I hear myself saying that, and I think, well, that's true of me.
Yes.
And that, without self-hate, without, which is hard, because conditioning wants to jump right in there and say, well, see, the problem was you all along.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can sidestep that, then, oh, that's really interesting. I never thought about that. I never saw myself that way. Then there's the, you know, let's do experiments with that now.
Yes. It becomes interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sherry, the phones are still ringing here.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Vince from Phoenix. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Good evening, Vince.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, and you?
Oh, I'm just nursing a cold or something.
Oh. Let's see, that would make you at one with most of this country, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a question that kind of came up recently for me, just with regards to, you know, when you go through big life changes,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of curious as to, you know, the people who end up sticking around and the people who don't. And
yeah.
I'm just kind of, like, going through lots of life changes lately, and I'm not sure how to kind of deal with the outcome of, like, the people who do end up sticking around, and, you know, I don't know how to phrase that question, really, because it's more like it's in the process of happening.
Yeah, so you're going through all these changes.
Yeah.
If we just pick an arbitrary point somewhere there in the past, and you were that person having that life with those people,
right.
Then you start going through all of these changes, and certain people kind of get on the ride with you. And, well, probably everybody's on the ride with you in the beginning, and then some just start falling off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then now here you are, and you realize that some of the people are still with you, and some of the people aren't.
Right, and some of them I think I need to let go of.
Uh-huh. So some of them have stayed, and maybe it would have been well if they had not.
Some of them have what? Sorry, what was the last?
You're beginning to think it might have been a good thing if some of the ones who have made it this far hadn't.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it feels like you then need to do something about that?
I need to move in that direction in an affirmative way, you know, to kind of just say, okay, I'm letting go of this past in my life and all these people that were relating to me in that way, and now moving on. And I feel like I'm just kind of stuck in this world, you know, without making my own decision about it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think I do. Let me try this and see if I'm with you. See if I'm one of the ones still on the trip. The interesting thing to me about that is that the way you described it, or at least the way I understood it, people were just doing what they were doing. They were either staying or going. And it sounds like a fair number of them didn't make it. Is that true?
I'm not sure, like, they're staying or going, but I think that I just keep them in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not true that some of the people that you started out with aren't still with you.
Right.
Okay. My misunderstanding. I thought what you were describing was that as you go along, certain people fall away and certain people stay with you.
Right. I think what I'm struggling with mostly is that I try and hold on to these relationships.
Got it.
And when
that makes it really easy, actually.
Okay.
Because one of the things that we talk about a lot is that we're conditioned to think in terms of doing. And that's the language of karmic conditioning. You know, well, what should I do? What do I do? What do I need to do now?
Right.
I have this problem. What do I do? And what I encourage people to consider is that it's almost never about doing something. It's about not doing something. So it makes it very easy for you because what you're doing is holding on to these relationships.
If
you stop holding on to them,
they will fall away if they need to.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
Much easier than trying to figure out how to get rid of them.
Right. Cool.
Isn't that a good deal?
Yeah, that's a great deal.
I wish that we could help your cold as quickly and easily.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vince.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Vince. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, you made it sound so easy there.
Yes.
I'm working.
We can make it sound easy, huh? Actually, it is kind of easy.
Yes.
It's just shockingly easy. And conditioning makes it so very, very hard.
Yes.
Yeah, if we just had that switch inside the head that just turns it right off, just pop it off and then sit there for, half hour, 2 hours or something, and just see what the issues are.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like with Vince, he's working very hard to hold these relationships together,
mm-hmm.
and now he's seeing the possibility of
just
not working that hard.
Yeah.
And seeing what the relationships... Seeing where those relationships go of their own accord.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's keeping them there, of course, is this conversation. This yammy, yammy, yammy in the head of it needs to be this way, and what about this? I got to do this, and what about that? When there's freedom from that, even for a few minutes, everything just comes into perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's wonderful.
Another commercial for meditation.
Yes. And the opportunities that come when we sit still and allow to be there, whatever's there.
Yes. Yes. Allow life to have itself.
Yes.
You know, we're so busy. It's as if, they're at the radio station. People come in to do their radio show, and you walk in and stand there and go, yammy, 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 through their whole show.
Yeah.
That's just exactly what it's like.
Yes.
You know, if we can just not give our attention to that yammy, 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 we get to hear the clear signal.
Which is always there.
Which is always there. The station is always on. Life is always living.
Always.
And if we don't know that, as I'm fond of pointing out, we have a whole new set of problems.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
If we're not there for life, then we need to really attend to what's going on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
But as long as we're breathing, as long as we're here, if we can turn down that static, we can tune into the program that is life. And it's compelling and fulfilling and exciting and interesting and
sustaining.
Light years ahead of that monotonous drone of ego.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And people can tune us in next week. Loud
yes.
and clear.
And hopefully we won't just sound like that monotonous
drone.
That like yammy, 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 interfering with the signal of life.
Yes. We're just tuning into life.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. We're at the end of our hour here, Sherry.
Gosh. It flies, as they say.
It flies. talked to some great people today.
Yes.
I'd like to thank Lori and Jay, our stalwarts, all of our callers, all of our listeners today. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. You can email us over the next week when we're not on the air at openair@kzsu.org. Archives of all the shows are at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. And tune us in next week at 5 p.m.
We'll be talking with you then.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.